Have you ever watched an apocalyptic sci-fi movie and wondered, could any of this really happen? I'm Carrie Bechet, and on Hypothetical, we explore what-if questions two ways, through speculative science fiction and through insight from the world's most brilliant scientists. And spoiler alert, your favorite sci-fi movies aren't nearly as far-fetched as you may think. Time travel with me into our possible futures on Hypothetical. New episodes every Tuesday, available on all podcast apps. That's Hypothetical, Hyperthetical.
Realms of peril and glory will begin after these short messages. We'd like to thank our patrons, Leroy Cassidy, Jennifer Mayer, and Micah Cartwright, for their support in making this series possible. If you'd like to join them and get ad-free listening, bonus shows, and a lot more, then please go head over to patreon.com/lightandtragic. It's the absolute best way to support the show, and you get a lot of really good perks for doing it. Again, that's patreon.com/lightandtragic. This is Making the Game, Realms of Peril and Glory's interview show. This week we're interviewing Shamini Bendel. You might know her from her work with RP Geeks and also an upcoming series of Liminal for Realms of Peril and Glory. Enjoy! Welcome one and welcome all back to Realms of Peril and Glory. Thank you so much for being here today. I am here with an incredible member of the actual play community. Please, Shamini, could you introduce yourself?
Oh, darn, yes. Well, my name is Shamini, as you've mentioned. I see her. I'm doing a lot of TTRPG stuff, streams. Mm-hmm. In my normal, like, day job, I do science journalism. Which is a whole other thing.
Yeah, that's a whole other thing.
I have a whole other side thing where I'm like trying to write a musical and I'm really into music. Oh, that's a whole other thing. That's not relevant.
I'll ask you about that after the fact, because yeah, that sounds fun.
I'm just trying to think of things to introduce myself with. Yeah, that'll do. That too much.
No, it's brilliant. So our audience would probably know you from RP Geeks, and you will be, we can say you will be appearing what? On Realms of Peril and Glory.
Oh, big reveal! Oh my gosh.
Relatively soon. Do you want to tell the people roughly about what we did? I mean, not giving away too much, but a little bit.
I had such a good time, so I got a message from Zach saying, come play with us. And I was like, what is this liminal that we're doing? We're playing a game called Liminal. And I was like, who are these people? What is this liminal? And it was in person, which was so nice, because I do. I love the ability to stream and record and everything from home and play games from home. So good. And like, I appreciate that we've kind of all like discovered that and been able to hold on to it.
Mm.
But especially with meeting new people for the first time,
yes.
It was so nice. So we were all meeting up in person.
I know.
And eating pizza and recording a podcast.
Mm-hmm.
And it turns out that the game Liminal was awesome. And the players were awesome.
Yes.
Awesome, like so awesome. I was like, oh my God. I had such a good time. I'm really, I'm very excited for this, for that podcast to come out.
I'm really excited for people to hear it, because I think all of us, after we left that recording, were just like, that was pretty good.
It really worked. Sometimes everything comes together and you can't you can't guarantee it and you can't plan it.
No.
But the character, and like, I felt like I did a good job, and then
you
everyone
did.
Else, I was like, oh, everyone's awesome. And then the relationships kind of went really well. And like, your story was really good. Everything just fell into place nicely. And it was just one of those times where you're just like, yes.
I cannot wait for people to hear it. That will be coming. I mean, I'll give a little. Your series will be arriving at the top of 2023, next year.
Yeah, so I'm kind of like guesting on this sort of like ongoing adventure with these awesome, awesome characters. Then I get to like just come in and be like, hi, I'm here.
Mess shit up.
Yeah.
Amazing. So let's talk a bit about you and not about us. Let's talk about you. So how did you first find D&D and role-playing games in general? Because it feels like everyone's got a different path.
I'm one of these like relative newbies to it, in this sort of like recent wave of like, oh my God, this is a thing.
Me too.
And like, why, where, what was I doing with my life? Like, wasting it, not playing TTRPGs,
not pretending,
like a fool. Like, when I was little, like, playing, like, make-believe games and creating stories was, like, the most
epic. It was the best thing.
It was the absolute best. And, like, the stories that happened through, like, essentially improvising them while playing a role were always, like, so much more awesome than you could ever either remember or describe or explain or try and write down. And you're like, why was it so good again? Oh no, but it was really good.
It was great.
I can't quite, like.
And you could never write it down.
You can't capture it like a butterfly. You can't like stab it. Not that, sorry, it's getting violently etymological. Entomological. Did we mix up?
Bugs.
Sorry. Come hit me. No harm to butterflies. I'm sorry. I love butterflies. I don't stab them. Oh God. What was I? I like. Yeah.
Finding D&D and role playing games.
So TTRPGs. Oh, and then I did theatre. So I mentioned.
We're all little performers.
Exactly. So then
Liz Campbell, who you played with, has coined the term that our group of people, we're all just little theater performers. We're all little performers. That's why we do role-playing games, because we're all little performers.
I am actually kind of average height, so I don't know. I'd like to point out.
It's weird, yeah. Weird.
Yeah. Right, well, sorry. Right, so.
Yes,
that
did
was
drama.
Great. And then I was like, oh, I should write all the plays. That was great. I did a bit of improv as well, but the improv I did was what you would expect of improv, like relatively short form, relatively sort of comic focused. And it didn't give me quite the same like storytelling buzz.
No.
But useful skills, because I've recently done an improv course and I'm like, oh, all of this is so relevant for, especially for performing TTRPGs, not just phone games.
Improv is something I've been wanting to do more of.
I did this course. It was so enlightening. A lot of the just sort of rules for a good scene. I was like, oh, yes, we should. One of the most interesting one, which I thought was something that like probably make most sort of like D&D groups groan, was our teacher always said, am I allowed to mildly swear on your
of course, please.
Our teacher always said, shit or get off the pot. By which she meant, don't talk about it. Just do it. Stop talking about it. You either do it or you don't do it. You do not stand there having a scene discussing what you're about to do. And I was like,
oh my God, yeah. Yes. I completely agree. But also, from a role play perspective, I get why we have an impulse to do that, because it's not like improv comedy where you live and die by how funny the thing is, how active and entertained you keep the audience. In D&D and actual play and role playing games, you live and die by whether or not you put your character into dangerous situations.
So I think like tactical discussions of what we should do is usually where that kind of thing comes up. But I might slightly disagree in that I think
that's fair.
You might not live or die, but I think I have had to shift my thinking a lot from the home game. Everything I'm like, whatever I do is I'm doing it because it's what my character would do. And it's kind of true to that realism. I've shifted to a lot more of a, I do want to entertain the audience, and if someone is committing to several hours of watching us play, it's got to be slightly different. And it's I would like it to be. It doesn't have to be. I would like it to be faster paced and a little bit more getting to the point, a little bit more concise.
Yes.
Than I would otherwise. Than in my home games.
I mean, I completely agree with you on that front. I just get where people come from in needing, feeling like they need to plan and over plan and keep discussing of like, what if?
Sensible.
It's like,
you don't want to do it wrong. You don't want to be like the GMs.
Exactly.
Be like, what did you do that for, you fools? Yeah. You fell into my plot.
No, absolutely. You're right.
I failed to answer the first question. I'm sorry. This is not going well as an interview.
Oh, yeah. How did you get it? Then you did
and then I got
drama. And then, sorry.
And then I discovered D&D and I was like, this is what's missing from my life. And then I got really addicted. Now I play TTRPGs too much. And my partner's like, are you okay? Do you not need an evening off? And I'm like, no, I have to play another game. It's fine. I'm fine. Everything's fine.
I know that. I know that feeling. The thing is, I feel like I could relate so heavily to what you're saying. I feel a kinship in that way. That's like, are you okay? You seem to be playing a lot of this game. Is it D&D that brought you in?
Yeah, for sure. It is, to be honest. After that initial, the sort of very first late night drunken game I played, which did sort of lead into a cartoon campaign, the thing that did bring me in properly was watching campaign one of Critical Role.
Excellent.
After it already started, but before it had finished.
So. Oh, wow. You got in early.
Is that maybe it is early, actually. So it was.
Considering they're long, like getting in before campaign one finished feels early.
Does it? It was for me, an alarmingly
long time
ago.
I'm not huge into Critical Role. I like some of their bits, but
it was six and a half years ago, actually. So like
a long time.
Yeah, it feels relatively recent, but it's not quite. When I say I'm sort of a newbie, I'm not like sort of one of the sort of pandemic newbies, which I think has been, you know, also bringing loads of new people into the hobby as something that can be done remotely.
Mm.
But yes, yeah, so Critical Role really, really had a big impact because. Mm. It fed my obsession between the, you know, once every 2 to 4 weeks games that we organize, right? First campaign, oh, when should we play? Okay, great. And I was like, what do I do now? I'm going to watch hours and hours of Critical Role right now. Like, you watch the first episode of campaign one and you're like, what is this? What is happening? What mine? Comment cards? Percy and Keyleth are making comment cards. Who are these people? And what's a comment card? And why are they making them? What's going on? However, 5 episodes later, I'm obsessed.
Or what? 12 hours of your life later?
I know. It is, when I put it like that, a long time. But I'm just like, I'm entirely 100% invested in whatever the heck's going on here with Clarota and carpets and like, of the weird pyramid. Absolutely obsessed. And it showed me also then how to play better as well. What are the possibilities? Obviously, that's only one possibility. That's one demonstration. Yeah. But being able to see another example other than, you know, you and your mates sort of making something up, it had a huge impact on realizing the potential.
So then how did you make the jump from player to dungeon master?
Ooh, when did I first DM? So I think just the usual situation whereby I wanted more, so I had to create it myself.
Yep.
So I did. And I was like, right. And also I wanted to introduce it to more people.
Yes.
So I was like, you, we're happening. I'm running a one-shot for you. Almost entirely, I almost exclusively run one-shots.
Yeah,
I find
fair.
It much, much easier. And I love like getting random people in and getting new people in and introducing people to the concept. That's why I started. And like similarly now, I don't DM a lot and I don't DM like campaigns on stream, but I love the sort of freedom and like low responsibility of one shots.
Did you feel like there was like a big learning curve from just being a player to being a DM, or did you just walk straight into it and was like, nah, I know this shit.
Don't know. Yeah, I just did it. And it was so long ago now. It's kind of funny, actually, because I did. I ran a campaign early on that didn't finish, predictably.
Oh, when do they?
And I sort of realized that, like, they're never gonna get to Haldor's Valley. And they've been talking about it since episode one. And never gonna happen. Like, you know, the pacing was all off and there wasn't enough clues. There wasn't enough plot happening. Anyway, I just did it. I just freaking did it. And I've always
written stories
and I was, all I cared about was the plot. And I was like, what's the story? What's the reveals? I love reveals.
Yes.
Reveals.
But I think that's probably one of the better ways to go about DMing. Cause I feel like I came at it for the first time as an over-preparer.
Yeah.
I had every contingency planned. I put them in a bottle, in like a ship in a bottle scenario, and I had every inch.
Like literally?
They were in a hotel that was locked. Like they couldn't get out. And if they tried to leave, I had contingencies for like where they could go and what would happen and what were the, you know.
That's valid. That's like not
it's
let,
totally
like, railroading is so valid, or in this case, bottling. Mm. Like, I'm very pro that.
But it was, over preparing. No. Like, the thing is,
nobody got time for that.
That game didn't even actually end up happening because it was like straight before, it was like Feb 2020 that I had finished prepping. And I was going to be a big first thing. I sent out physical invitations and was like with their character sheets and everything. And I was like, if you bring this invitation, you get a free inspiration point and you can re-roll. And then we were all getting towards the pandemic started hitting. We were like, oh, we can't do this now, can we? And we just haven't gone back to it.
But you could still do it.
I could absolutely still do it. And I will run it one day.
Also, if any of those original people do still have their physical paper invitation, imagine the inspiration that they would get.
Oh my God. Like
they would have earned it.
They would have definitely earned it. That's so good. No, it's just we've only recently gotten to the point where like having games in person is starting to feel doable.
Yeah,
like with the liminal that the recording, that was literally the first weekend we'd ever done. I think that might have been the first proper in-person game with more than just one or two people that I'd done since the pandemic started. Wild.
As a podcast network, our first priority has always been audio and the stories we're able to share with you. But we also sell merch, and organizing that was made both possible and easy with Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell and grow at every stage of your business, from the launch your online shop stage all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. They have an all-in-one e-commerce platform and in-person POS system, so wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. With the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers. Shopify has allowed us to share something tangible with the podcast community we've built here, selling our beanies, sweatshirts, and mugs to fans of our shows without taking up too much time from all the other work we do to bring you even more great content. And it's not just us. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the US. Shopify is also the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/realm, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/REALM now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/realm.
Anna Sheridan, missing for nearly 6 months now.
I need you to find me.
The Sheridan Tapes, a serialized horror mystery podcast. Stream the complete series today on Realm and on all podcasting platforms.
Oh, what are we talking about? Campaigns. Oh, I was just going to say that I've recently started running a book campaign. I've been running Waterdeep Dragon Heist.
And okay.
At first, I was like, oh, I guess I'll just do it. Now, I've like seen loads of people DM. I've been GM'd by loads of people. Like now I'm like, this has to be perfect. This has to be 100. This has to be the best thing ever. I'm paralyzed myself with just like, oh no. I can't do it anymore. Oh God, it has to be. Also, Waterdeep Dragon Heist. Too many NPCs. Oh my God. So many NPCs. And so I obviously have added more NPCs because every time they turn a corner, they meet someone and I'm like, oh yeah, it's a new NPC.
This is Srebulok. He's a goblin and you love him now.
So I find it quite stressful now, actually. I've done this to myself. It's entirely my own fault, but yeah.
That's interesting. So do you think DMing has gotten more stressful for you over time?
Yeah.
That's really interesting because I find the absolute opposite.
No, I think it's because it's a book, right? Now it's
right,
like,
okay.
It's D&D. It's is it Faerun? No, which one is it? Eberron? No, the other one. The Sword Coast. One of them.
Yes, the Sword Coast. Yeah. That is the one.
And it has to be right. And now I'm like, it has to be right. What does the book say? What does the law say on the internet? Now I can't just be like, oh, yeah, that was King Steve who ruled Don't you remember that lore about King Steve? And, oh, wow, he's so smart. You know all the lore. And I'm like, yeah.
Yeah. No, that's actually why I think I've never felt confident running a book campaign, running a pre-generated campaign, because I'm like, but what if I break it, down the line?
I know, right?
Yeah. What if I say something and like just in the minute they're like, how many coins does he have in his pocket? And I'm like, I don't know, 4.
Yeah.
And then down later in the book, he has to have had 6 coins in his pocket.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I do that also just with my own stories, though. Like, I'll just throw something in and then I'll realize, oh, that's actually majorly significant. So, like, I mentioned something the other day. I was like, oh, yeah, this character sort of has this kind of abilities. And they kept asking questions about it. And they were like, seemed really interested. And I was like, oh, no one's supposed to be able to do that in this plane. Oh, that doesn't exist here. Oh, no. Oh, God. I guess this is a plot point for later. So now I have to somehow, like, bring that whole thing in and, like, write a whole story around it, which I can do.
You can do it.
But, like, I will need, like, we're on... So, Waterdeep Dragon Heist, basically, we're about to start chapter 3, and we're already on episode, like, 28.
Wow.
Like, we really should have gotten there a lot, but, like...
That's a lot.
Yeah. It's too... No, yeah, it's bad. We should have...
And you said something about how you only run one shots?
Apart from that, this one.
Apart from that
one campaign, which just goes on, because I keep throwing new plot at them, and... They keep having amazing conversations and ideas, and they're doing their own thing, and it's having great. And I'm like, oh, we should really carry on with the book plot. But
I'm having a great time here.
You do go and often do this, you know, character relevant thing. We'll have a whole, like, several episodes on that. Great. We're all having a good time, though, which is the important thing.
Well, that's the important thing. Yeah. Is it recorded or is it?
No, that's my endgame. Yeah. No, it's so, like, 28 episodes and we haven't, like, gotten to the... Like, main plot point of Waterdeep Dragon Heist, yeah. Like, I couldn't handle the pressure of people, like, waiting for it. Like,
excuse me, I was promised that there needed to be a dragon for the heist.
I know, right?
And I'm 20 plus episodes in. Shamani, excuse me. Hello?
Yeah. Difference between a home game and a stream game.
That's actually one of the questions that I had written down. How do you feel about, like, because you've done all of them. You've done pre-recorded, you've done live and home.
Yeah.
So what do you feel like are the key differences between them? Do you see differences between them? How do you react differently to the different scenarios?
Compared to home games, when it is for an audience, I'm definitely shifting my preference more into making it more performative, I think.
Mm-hmm.
When I first started playing, I took a lot of satisfaction from sort of, you know, like dropping hints that only I knew what they meant, or maybe me and the Dungeon Master, and, like, you know, building my character with only me knowing what was going on in their head. And then I kind of realized, like, well, no, if no one else gets it, that's kind of I want the other players. And then now I'm like, oh, the audience should probably get it too.
Yeah,
my hints should be less subtle. And that's fine. And, like, just commit to... I have a terrible tendency to have, like, you know, like edgy characters with, like, a dark secret. And then that dark secret takes, you know, like, 50 episodes to maybe slightly be revealed. And I know in my heart of hearts, and I'm trying to teach myself and convince myself, that it would be much better to have that out quite early and then to maybe have some new character development. And then maybe something else will come of that. And maybe your character will change and grow and you can see where it goes from there, instead of hoarding your one, like, little, like, backstory thing.
That's what
I'm trying to work on.
It's interesting because I am also guilty of that in home games. And I feel like doing Realms of Peril and Glory has been really good for me, because doing exactly that, of, like, cutting to the chase. Mm-hmm. Like, this is for an audience. They need to know what's going on. They need to have some clue of this. And also, I don't want to produce 50 episodes of a campaign. There are so many other people running long-form campaigns that are frankly doing it better than I ever could. What I came to do is produce, like, content that was, like, between, like, 3 and, like, 20 episodes and no longer than, like, 2 hours. you know, at a push.
And you've got satisfying story and you've got the ability to have higher production values.
Yes, exactly. When you put that limitation on it of like, you don't have 50 episodes to go.
Yeah.
You're hurtling to, I remember in our first campaign fail, you were hurting, I was hurtling towards the finale and I was like, shit, I'm 12 episodes in.
Yeah, yeah.
I only wanted this to run 12 episodes. And I got to pick up the pace.
I had the same experience when I started doing short form things. And I was like,
yeah,
I want to tell the story. And if I hoard everything, I'm not going to get to do it. And so I just like pushed my own arc forward. And I was like, this is what my character's doing. This is how their relationship with this one is changing. This is what they're like saying to this one. And like,
yes.
And it was really great. And I think in long form campaigns, I still got this tendency to like hold back. For fear of running out of stuff, I think is what it is. I'm afraid that if I let my character do the one idea I have or change in one way, I won't be able to think of anything else. And that's not true.
But to be fair, there are a lot of campaigns that run for a long, long time. I mean, you know, one example that you brought up, Critical Role, runs for how many episodes? It's like up into the 100 mark by the time they finish a campaign. And people love it. And they're long and they take their time. You know, so there's nothing wrong with it. That
is
one way of doing
Absolutely,
it.
Absolutely, yeah.
But it's not everyone's cup of tea and it might not be what you want to achieve.
I think that's what I guess that's kind of what I mean is that like, that is what I want from my home games, Critical Role. And I do love Critical Role for that. But when I'm doing like streaming and actual plays, I'm pushing more towards, so I saw Fantasy High from Dimension 20 for the first time in the last few months. I have not yet watched the rest of their stuff. Yeah, I'm so behind. I filled up my life with too much gaming.
Yep, that's
time
fair.
For watching. And I was like, oh gosh, a completely different way of doing things. Like, this is very carefully structured and controlled and plotted out in advance and fits in each thing. And everyone, you know, boom, here's what my character's like. And like, and I was like, oh, amazing. And like, so that's something I'm like, I want to kind of shift to more like formative, more like for the audience.
Narrative.
Yeah, I don't know. It's sort of, it's like less focus on the sort of, the realism of the individual experience and more focus on getting more story across.
Yeah.
If that's left, feels a bit less.
For me personally, in my taste, I'm a huge fan of Dimension 20. I mean, anyone who has seen Dimension 20 and listens to Realms of Peril and Glory, you know, it's no secret that that is a huge inspiration for what I want to achieve with the show. I love their way of telling stories with actual play. So it has been an influence for me on my GMing style and all that. But I'm not overly bothered with realism in my storytelling. I'm happy to bend the rules of reality to make things feel better.
Yeah, agreed. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So I sort of come back to railroading a bit. Like I quite like railroading because the GM, you know, is in control. And also even to the kind of GM's word is final type rules or like rule of fun, like, it doesn't have to be, depending on what the players at the table want and what everyone's happy with, it doesn't have to be the like 100% like what the die says. If everyone wants something to happen, it should happen.
Absolutely. There are those moments, aren't there, where like you can tell, and these are the best moments, you can tell everyone at the table is just so on the edge of their seat because they want something to happen. And if the dice roll that way and they roll well, it's just so euphoric, isn't it?
But if you leave it to the dice, it does feel earned. And that's the problem. You can't just go like, let's have that happen. Like, you have to.
Well, because that's what separates it from like what you said of like imagining stories as a kid and being a game and being a more adult thing is like if you were just a kid, you'd be like, and I stab my sword into the villain and he's dead. But if you actually, if there's actual chance in it and you feel like you earned it, it's just so much more.
Yeah.
Powerful for me anyways.
The thing that reminded me of is the other thing I've been doing recently is we've done a couple of live shows where the audience has to throw in suggestions. We've been streaming them as well with interacting with Twitch chat. You mentioned, you know, the difference between sort of live and pre-recorded.
Yes.
We have been doing some where Twitch chat, give me your suggestions. And that is absolutely great as a GM for someone like making a better suggestion and being like, yes, I like it, and therefore that is now happening. Like at the Natural History Museum gig we did, I was like, you hear a rumble coming towards you in the canyons, and someone, I might be misremembering what it was, but I think this was there. Someone was like, oh my God, are they getting Lion King or something? And I was like, you are now.
Yes.
Hell yeah.
Yes, you are now. Yeah.
It was good. Oh, yeah, it was going to be, I think it was going to be water. I think it was going to be like a flood of water kind of situation. I was like, no.
Wildebeest
are coming for you. Run.
That's so good. Well, I'm going to slightly pivot off what you just said. No.
New things.
No, well, I'm gonna roll off that.
Segue.
And we're gonna talk about, you are, as well as being a true nerd, are a science communicator. So an even truer nerd, one could say.
That's my whole job. That's a good job as well. Can recommend.
You found a really good way of incorporating that into the actual play space. And I was wondering if you could just talk about, first of all, why you wanted to marry those two things together and how you've gone about doing it.
I probably do have to give more credit to Mr. Ali Jennings, one of my fellow RP geeks. Well, that is indeed the name of our host of Science Communicators, who play D&D and talk about science. He was like so into the idea and so driving it.
Yeah.
He really, like, so I run one shots for random people, and it sometimes really pays off because I was running them for work people, and Ali was like, yes, what is this? Yes. He'd never played D&D or anything before. He was so into it. I think mainly because it allows him to be a proper, like, chaos gremlin. Like,
Ooh,
like betraying everyone or like running off or like not. Just, yeah. It's like, no, Ali, come on. Oh, God. I'm pretty sure it was his idea to start off with. And he's like, can we do D&D and talk about science? I can't remember what the initial pitch was, but what it's ended up as now, which I really like, this RP Geek sort of main campaign that we do, is, okay, let's play D&D, reskin to sci-fi, okay, so that everything that happens in the D&D world, we have to be able to explain with science. So you're like, oh, I'm casting magic missile or shield, whatever, but like both in the world, because it's kind of sci-fi, you have to explain it, and then you have to like actually be able to be like, yeah, but how?
So can you give me an example of how you might explain, like, for example, shield or magic missile?
I'm trying to think of like if there's any good ones that we've had. So the thing that I think is quite nice about it is we've tried not to focus too much on sort of like, I think actually shield and magic missile are probably like the worst.
I was going to say those are two pretty, like, yeah.
Oh, you power them with your space gun, or like, oh, you bring up your force field. What we would do in those situations, if we were doing like, if it was a technology based character, we would go and do some research and be like, yeah, but can, what's a force field's real? Have we invented force fields
Could
yet?
They exist?
Does that,
yeah.
How does that work? Like, what is the best way to design a force field? You know, is it some kind of a light? Is it like some sort of sound based force? I don't actually know the answer to this. It's very interesting.
No, I'm waiting to hear.
Go into
Tell
that.
Me how you're going to invent the force field, Charlie.
Yeah, I know. Well, usually I would have done a little bit of research before launching into my explanation. But then you have to, basically you have to go away and then you have to like pitch your idea to everyone else and be like, right, here's why my ability, whatever, my spell, my feat, whatever, is scientifically plausible. Here's like, here it is. Or something that happens in the show, which can be really random and can kind of work with any D&D game in a way, because at one point we went into a huge deep mine and then we got like a message on our little basically sending stone. It's a sending stone.
Sure.
It's even stone shaped, but it's technological. We don't know how that one works yet because it's the DM's thing. But we got this message and we were like, how did that message get through that much rock? And then we went and I think Simon went and researched how people in real mines communicate at great depths. And they have huge, great structures that could sort of like blast a sound wave.
Radio
I think.
Signal.
I'm not. Yeah, yeah. Must. Yeah, yeah. I presume.
I'm not the science communicator, so don't
I can't remember
take
now.
My word as rote on that.
Yes, it must be radio because it's long wavelength, right? That's why it has to be really big. So it pops on top of the mine and it goes down. Mm. So like things that come up, things that we want to be able to do, we go like, oh, let's science the shit out of it. Yeah. And then we just have a great time nerding out and just talking about the science. And then we carry on the, and then, you know, then we have the science D&D debrief section, we call it, where we debrief D&D. We're very proud of that name. And then we go back to the then we go back to the sort of campaign. And that's our weekly campaign stream, basically.
That sounds, I just love that because it feels so unique. I feel like everyone talks about like how realistic or not realistic D&D things are.
People love picking on, like, I feel like people are really into being like, oh, that couldn't really happen. Like, at least with sci-fi, maybe less so with fantasy. We're like, obviously that couldn't really happen because, you know,
we haven't invented a warp drive yet.
Okay. Not yet.
You've kind of chosen to do the most nitpicky possible thing in the most nitpicky possible genre.
Yeah.
Exactly. How's that going for you?
Thank you. We're very popular. we have many friends. But no, this is the time of the nerds, you know? The geeks are rising up and and embracing ashen and enthusiasm. Even sort of narrow. Not everyone has to love it, but I love that we all do genuinely love it and that kind of like nerdy aspect of it. I hope that people enjoy that. And I think actually, to be honest, I hope that they enjoy the fact that we're having a good time and that kind of like relationship between us and, you know, the banter.
You having a good time. You having a good time on an actual play show, I feel, is the most important thing.
Yeah.
That's the number one thing. Like, the rules don't really matter that much. The story doesn't even really matter that much. It does to an extent. Like, it does. But if the rules are perfect and the story's on point, but you can tell everyone at the table's having a terrible time, it's not fun. You don't want to listen to it.
Yeah. And I think it's also interesting that I think it can be quite difficult. I love guesting on things, actually, but I actually prefer guesting on things where the existing cast know each other.
Interesting.
Because I think coming into a group with all people who don't know each other, you need the warm-up time to develop the relationship and to learn to trust each other. So it takes a lot longer to get into it. And one of the reasons I love our campaign is because we all know each other really well, know what people are going to do. We have a kind of jokes and things like that. And when I'm guesting on something where everyone already knows each other, they've already got that covered and I can come in and like disrupt.
But what if I was here and I was a little gremlin?
I did not come in and say blur. I'll be a little gremlin on the upcoming episodes of Liminal that you should watch.
You didn't say blah, though you blah. Could have.
Blah. I don't remember. Maybe I did.
No, you definitely didn't say blah. That would have been too on the nose for that. So just to piggyback off of the science communicator stuff, I hear you have also designed a game.
Did you know, Zach?
Yes.
Did you know that like writing a TTRPG is really hard?
Yeah, I did actually. I've got like two or three unfinished games on my... I was writing one that I was so excited about that I'll get back to it at some point. And then I reached the point where I was like, oh, I need combat mechanics.
No.
Fuck.
No one needs combat mechanics.
No, I did though. I'll tell you why afterwards, but it did need combat mechanics.
Mechanics is my approach to most of the one shots I run, actually. Very much leaning heavily on the mechanics part of that. Like, one of my favorite non-D&D games is Honey Heist on the basis
it's amazing.
That like, rules schmools, honey! Like, I don't know, just random stuff happens and, like, you can roll occasionally. It's fine, no one cares about the stats and everything. So a lot of my games are done in a similar vein. And usually I just make something up where I'm just like, oh, okay, you have five stats that are, like, the basic, like, D&D main stats, and you can also have some 10 health and I'll just make up how much you hit, whatever, it doesn't matter. Okay, fine, there you go, good, you got some stats, no one cares, right, roll. You roll and it's either good or bad, like everyone knows, it's fine, and you can be good at something and bad at something. I do like having so I feel like often in D&D a lot of characters are quite good at a lot of things,
mm-hmm.
and not really terrible at things. And I love having very extreme stat ranges. I love having one thing. Like, if you think about superhero stories,
yes.
the whole point of the superhero is, yes, you have the super strength, but you also have the kryptonite. Like, you need two extremes. Otherwise, you're just... Otherwise, it's like realistic tactics combat simulator, which also is also good. I had a train of thought here somewhere. Hey, I wrote a
TCRPG. You wrote a game, I think, was the destination.
Yeah, right, good. Does it have some stats? I can't remember
now. I don't know.
I don't think it does, actually. Shit, I forgot to put stats in my... Oh, no, it doesn't. There are no stats.
You didn't put stats
in
your
game.
I
didn't put stats.
Okay.
Yeah, you just roll and it's either good or bad and, like, you take goodness or badness. No,
great.
I should explain this game
better.
What are you making it sound terrible.
Start at the very beginning. What is the game and what is it about?
Thank you for asking, Zach. I'm so glad. I'm so glad you brought it up because I've actually written a new game called New Jeans, Please, which I developed in conjunction with the RP Geeks and also Khalil at the Natural History Museum, who is an awesome sciencey D&D nerd. And he was running the Natural History Museum Lates event.
Love those.
A little while ago, earlier this year, and invited us to put on a show in basically an hour slot, which was the first thing that made me go, oh God, I need to come up with something that can work in an hour.
Yeah.
You
can shotgun.
Yeah, was my thought. We kind of workshop various ideas. And the other thing that I really wanted... and is my favorite thing about this is, as I was mentioning, the interactive elements is brilliant. So the way that it worked in this particular game, so the rules of the game are, feel free to like, it's so basic, you can just nick this and run it. Like, there's not that much more to
great.
It. Right.
I am making notes.
Right.
Look forward to new DNA, Zach, coming tomorrow.
You have to plead with Zach. For the new DNA. Yeah. Please,
tell me about your game.
Right, yeah. New genes, please. Oh, it's genetics. Oh, it's a pun on genes. Oh. What happens is, here's the rule. You're a little cute little creature living in a particular kind of world. And then someone comes along and gives you a mission. You got to go on this quest for me. It has to fit in an hour, okay? Like, they give you the quest. You agree to the quest. You don't have a choice here. You will go on the quest. Thank you. And they're going to help you out with your quest by providing, if you like, new genes. So at any mm-hmm. point you come across something that you're trying to do, you can roll a D6. Mm-hmm. If you get a high number, you do the thing. If you get a low number, you fail at doing the thing.
Okay.
But if you say, new genes, please, your mysterious quest giver / friend / whatever it is will imbue you with the genetics of a particular creature. And the way we do this in live games is that we ask the audience to suggest Oof. What that creature is. And if you get new genes and they're a helpful animal that will help you with the task you're trying to achieve, you know, oh, I'm trying to climb, oh, some monkey genes will be helpful here, then you automatically succeed and you sort of like go on to the next challenge.
Incredible.
And my other favorite thing about this is the sort of optional bonus way of playing it, which works well when you're kind of got an in-person live audience, is halfway through the game-ish, something goes wrong with the new genes mechanism, which makes it a little bit faulty. So you ask the audience member for a suggestion and they say, like, oh, well, did you know that squid have chromatophores that can change color? So that will help you camouflage. And you go, oh, you're a nerd, but thank
Learning.
You.
Learning.
Yeah. they're teaching. Like, I love it. They look like the audience are just there going like, I know about animals.
I've got animal facts.
And then what you do is you say, oh, okay, but oh, it's on the blink. The new genes machine is on the blink. I'm going to need you to roll this giant inflatable D6.
I've seen this.
Good. So good. And like,
where did you find it?
Online somewhere. We just bought an inflatable dice.
Fair.
Two. And it's gold. And I'm like, oh, yeah, why are there not more giant inflatable dice in the world? Because it's so good. And my favorite moment at the Natural History Museum, like, it went so well. And we were like, they were like queuing up outside. And then like, they had to turn people away because they didn't fit in the room.
Oh my God.
That seems cool. I like this, but also sad. We had the whole room and someone had made a suggestion. They rolled it and they got a, you know, a six at a key moment. And just this entire room just like erupted in just like cheers.
Oh, that's so good.
And I was like, I don't think I'd be surprised if, you know, many of these people have played TTRPGs before, because this is not a gaming event, really.
No, no, no. But
and
that's
now
so
they
cool.
know the joy. Now they get it.
Oh, that's so cool, though, to introduce that at a live setting. So what is the... So what actually happens if you get the wrong genes? Because what I've been told is by the end, you end up as some form of weird eldritch monstrosity.
Because the problem is that each time you get new genes, you don't turn into that animal. You just get like combos of like different elements of them that are useful. So you might like suddenly get tentacles, and then you might gain wings, and like, you know, when you're just rolling to succeed or fail, it obviously somewhat depends on what you've got already. And like, you know, if someone rolls like a one when trying to give you, you know, the wings of an eagle, you know, you might end up with the leg of a slug. And like, just be like, this also happened in the game. Just like oozing along, like, help me. mid combat as well, you know, just like, no.
Oh, that's unhelpful. Can't run, can't hit.
Yeah.
Well, that's great, though.
So at the end, Eldritch Horror. Oh, well, I can't give away the end, because then the endings are all sort of like, it depends on the story and like,
okay.
There's always a reveal. It has to be a reveal. So I'm writing
love
it
a reveal.
Up. Yeah, I'm writing it up with some story suggestions in there so that anyone can pick this up and play it. You could play it on a stream with Twitch interacting. You could play it in a classroom setting with like a few people as players and the rest of the people as the sort of the otherworldly beings who are all like scientists who are giving you the new genes, whatever their characters are. And at the end, everyone in the sort of audience has to make a sort of final choice to decide the fate of the cute little player characters. Well, previously cute, now probably hideously terrifying.
I would love to play this game at some point. At some point soon, I would very much like to play this game.
Ooh, maybe I should run it for you. I haven't run it on stream yet, actually. On my to-do
list. I will come on stream. Mm-hmm. I will come on stream. Well, I think that kind of exhausts my questions. Is there anything else you'd like to talk about / plug?
I just want to say that I hope everyone's having a really nice time playing TTRPGs, and I hope people have the opportunities to play, to stay super nice and safe while playing, and like have a look into safety tools and how all these things work.
Yep.
To be really open to sort of like constant communicating and like checking in with people as to things that are working and things that are not working. If you have time in your life to watch shows, then obviously I'd love people to come and watch some RP Geeks.
Yes.
We've got the whole like campaign situation, but we've also got a lot of one shots, so you can just drop in, and some of them are interactive, so then you can make suggestions in chat and affect the plot, which is quite fun as well. So that's at RP Geeks DND. All over the place. Oh, we do TikTok as well, which is also really fun, because our TikTok clips are just like often just like little science clips of just like a fun science fact from the show, which is always really good, because it's just like, did you know? And then you just get a fun science
That's
fact.
That's really good.
Which is really nice. So yeah, check that out if you like that. And obviously check out the upcoming Liminal series, which is going to be so good.
Yes, so that's going to wrap things up, guys. Please do go check out RP Geeks. Check out everything Shamani has to offer, because it will all be excellent. And you can also where can people find you on Twitter, on anywhere else? Where can they go and support you?
My personal Twitter is at sbundell.
So go there.
I don't know what it is, and I don't post on there enough. So just follow me on Twitter. Just get a Twitter. Twitter's great.
Twitter's great
don't
for
do
now.
Don't scroll.
Twitter's
happy Twitter only. Oh no.
Twitter in moderation, guys.
Yes. Everything in moderation. That's the key. That's the key.
You can follow me on Twitter at ZachFG. That's ZACKFG. And the show is on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook at Realms Pod. That's REALMSPOD. If you've come over if you've come over to this interview via Shamani's outlets, it would be cool. I think we'll probably really like the show. We have have a lot of really great actual plays on the podcast feed, on the YouTube channel. So please go check them out. They're a lot of fun. You can support us on Patreon, where you get bonus shows, extra games, ad-free listening, all this extra stuff at patreon.com/lightandtragic. And I think that's all I've got to say. So, yeah, thanks so much, guys, and we'll see you later. Bye! Bye.
Greetings, adventurers. Today we're excited to introduce you to a new story, Dark Dice, a horror podcast that blurs the line between actual play and audio drama, where the story is determined by the roll of the dice. Six adventurers embark on a journey into the ruinous domain of the Nameless God. They will never be the same again. One of the players is not what they seem after a doppelganger, a creature that can assume the form and voice of whatever it kills, infiltrates the team. As the players are picked off and replaced one at a time, can they figure out who the monster is before it's too late? Can you? Here's a quick example of what our show sounds like.
The shambler with the jar of liquid inside of him.
Soren Arkwright let loose an arrow that cracked the glass, passing through the spine of the creature. The shambler still managed to maintain its forward momentum, but stumbled as it eagerly tried to bite and swipe at Soren, landing near his feet.
As Jeff Goldblum has now joined our cast, Dark Dice is available however you listen to podcasts.